Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Well, for a lot of people, the 2025 Montana legislature kind of takes center stage when you're talking about policy. When people are concerned about that, you look at the question, are we headed in the right direction? And if the answer is yes, then you try to enact policies that stay in that direction. If the answer is no, then you have to analyze, well, what direction do we need to go in? And then you point policies toward that. Montana might say, we're having trouble with the cost of living. We're having trouble with energy prices. We're having trouble with inflation. Our job market is good, but there's a lot of people who are looking at this Montana legislature and the governor's office as well to lead them in the right direction if they feel that's not been the case. We'll talk about that today as Montana Governor Greg Gianforte joins us in the first part of the show. And then John Iverson, he's representing the Treasure State Resources Association. There's a bill out there to put the guardrails on this Held versus Montana decision. Supreme Court recommended the legislature do that. There's a bill out there we'll talk about today on Voices of Montana. We'll get right into it, as I mentioned a bit later on, the Held versus Montana decision. There's a lot of concern over how that is going to be adjudicated into the future. And we'll talk about that with John Iverson, representing the Treasure State Resources Association, a bill by Wiley Gault, who's a Republican out of Martinsdale in the Senate, addresses a lot of that. And there's things to address in that. So we'll put that on the plate here a bit later on. We'll also ask our governor, Greg Gianforte, the governor of this great state of Montana, as he joins us now, about that a bit later on. And first of all, Governor, how you doing? Thanks for coming on, Greg.
Hey, Tom, it's good to be with you.
Thank you.
Doing great.
Yeah, good. Good to hear that. I'm just going to start off with, you know, as we think about, are we headed in the right direction? If not, what are some of the, well, the reasons for that? We look at this 2025 legislature, and they're trying to deal with those things, the cost of living, property taxes, taxes and budget overall, energy prices. You know, you can start wherever you want to start, because I know all of those things cross your plate, sir.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. When I travel around the state, in fact, I'll be going up to Great Falls today to cut a ribbon on a new business that's just opening up there. But it's affordability. It's affordability of energy. It's affordability of housing. It's the inflation we're seeing on groceries and eggs and everything else. And we've inherited that because of this last administration in Washington. They just spent like drunken sailors. And, you know, if you have a dollar and the government prints a second dollar and puts it in circulation, your dollar's now worth 50 cents. And because you got $2 chasing the same goods. So what can we do here at the state? Well, I've made it a priority to not grow state spending. This has put us in a position where we have surpluses. And I think if we have a surplus, it means we overcharge the people of Montana. That's why we have to give it back. I've proposed, on top of the tax reductions we've done, the largest tax reduction in state history. It would lower the income tax rate a full percentage point. We took it from 6.9 to 5.9. I propose we take it to 4.9. That's the rate most people pay. That would put over $800 million back into people's pockets across the state over the next 2 years. I think that's a big deal. I think they can figure out how to spend it better than the state can. And then we got to fix property taxes. This is why we're promoting the homestead rate reduction. That's going to help homeowners, small businesses, and renters across the state. I'm looking forward to getting those bills to my desk so we can make it easier to live here and prosper.
I know you had said, too, that you'd like to see something by mid-February. I'm not sure the legislature's on track for that. There's a number of proposals out there, though, that they're discussing. But go into the one that you like. I know it comes from the governor's, your task force on property taxes, and the homestead exemption and the eggstead, compstead exemption. Give us a little more on that, Greg.
Yeah, so this was the probably the biggest pole in the tent that this property tax task force came up with. And very simply, what it would do is it would allow Montanans in their primary residence to pay a lower property tax rate. It would also reduce most Montanans' property tax bill by about 15%. It would also apply to Main Street businesses, farms, and ranches. It would allow a lower rate for the first $3 million of real property at this lower Montana special rate. And then it also would apply to landlords, so there'd be an indirect benefit for tenants. Now, you have to ask the question, who's going to pay for this? Well, what it does is it shifts the burden to out-of-staters with second homes here. They don't pay income tax. I think it's just fair that they pay a little higher property tax. That's what the bill does. There's others that just want to reduce the rate on residential property, but what that would ultimately do is raise the rates on small business, agriculture, and it would give a tax break to these out-of-staters who don't pay income tax here. I just don't think that's a very smart idea.
You know, and there's discussion about, you know, property taxes reform kept in the property tax basket, so to speak. There are some out there that are trying to draw general fund money into that. What do you make of trying to keep those pockets of money? Because I know they're dedicated toward specific spending, especially the property taxes. What do you make about trying to keep those in their lanes?
Well, we had Grover Norquist out here last week. Yeah. He's the founder of Americans for Tax Reform. He appointed under Ronald Reagan. He's been doing this for a long time. And this is a trend he's seen in other states across the country where they've taken from Peter to pay Paul. And it's not a good idea. Because what ends up happening is, why should I tax the work that you do in order to subsidize local spending in another community? What ends up happening, in fact, when Grover Norquist talked about this, he says, every tax is like a tapeworm. Why would I swallow another one? Those are his words. And I think that applies here. It's fine to shift the burden to out-of-state people with second homes, but to take to increase the tax on someone's wages, the tax on work, to subsidize local spending doesn't make any sense. So we're going to resist attempts to do that and keep the property tax basket whole and keep the income tax basket whole as well. Income taxes pay for state services. Property taxes pay for local services, K-12, sheriff, county roads and bridges. And we'll help out where we can as we have one-time money, but a structural shift means that burden persists forever.
Montana Governor Greg Gianforte with us here today into his second term here in this 2025 or 69th Montana legislature, sort of taking center stage. Let's go to that 4.9%. I know that's a number that you've pointed at for quite some time, and you kind of get the familiar refrains. It's almost like they're reciting lines. Oh, yeah, tax cuts for the rich, so to speak. Go ahead.
That's the rate that most people pay. I mean, when I came into office, we had the highest income tax rate in the Rocky Mountain West. We had 7 brackets. It was really complicated. We simplified it. We went to 2 brackets. And by the time you get to $20,000 a year in income, you're paying the top rate. So when we lower that top rate, everybody gets a break. Everybody. We're still, even at 5.9, we've reduced to the percentage point, we're still one of the highest income tax rates in the Rocky Mountain West. We have to make Montana competitive. And the only way to do that, in addition to our other policies around workforce training and streamlining and red tape relief, we've got to lower that top tax rate.
Another thing on the plate there, too, is Medicaid reauthorization. I'm going to go to Skip listening in Hamilton on KLYQ. And Skip, it's good to have you on. Governor Greg Gianforte, I want to address Medicaid expansion, but I'm going to have you share your thoughts on it, and then we'll move forward.
Well, thank you, Tom, and good morning, Governor. And the Medicaid expansion is something that I've asked you about before at headquarters in Missoula and then also on the radio, and I'm hoping that it's staying on track. And do you still feel the same way about having sideboards on it, certain sideboards? If you could cliff note a few of them, it would be wonderful, and tell us whether you think that'll still hold by the end of the session. And sir, thank you for the way you laid out things in your State of the State address. You pointed out all the things that absolutely need the most attention, and I hope that yourself and the legislature can get it together and put some things out there that will make us better in the future. Thank you, sir, if you'll answer that about Medicaid expansion.
Thank you, Skip, for the call. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Skip. Yeah, and many of our rural communities rely on Medicaid. That's why we put it in our budget. But I also think that any of our social welfare programs should be a trampoline, not a hammock. Now, if somebody has long-term disabilities or, small children, single parent, that's a different category. But when we have able-bodied adults that need a hand up, I'm all for helping them with Medicaid expansion. But in an economy like we have, they should be working. This is why I'm a big fan of work requirements on Medicaid. We did not have a cooperative administration in Washington under Joe Biden with the old boy Trump coming into office. They're going to be a lot more helpful. Work requirements means we bring accountability to the program, so it's there for the people that need it. But they got to do their part, too, so that we can help them get back on their feet and become self-sufficient.
Well, can kind of get into this a little more, but one of the things on my mind to talk to you about was President Trump coming into office. And I know that you were able to go and be a part of that in some of those inauguration events. Give us your thoughts on that, if you would.
Well, it was an honor to be in the Capitol to see the president sworn into office. Both the First Lady and I were there, along with a number of Montanans. I mean, Montana showed up in force. I posted the picture up on Facebook. I think we had over 200 people at a barbecue event. There was a Montana-specific barbecue event. People were thrilled to celebrate. This country took a hard turn in November away from woke leftist policies back to common sense. And all I can say for Montanans and all Americans is buckle up. Boy, this boy is moving fast. And it's refreshing. We have good people getting appointed. Doug Burgum, my good friend from North Dakota, is going to be running the Department of Interior. I've already gotten a letter off to him with Montana's priorities. Brooke Rollins, running Department of Ag. I've gotten to know her. She worked many, many years for Rick Perry in Texas, who's a dear friend. And so I've gotten a letter off to her with Montana's priorities. And Lee Zeldin, I served in Congress with him. He's going to be running the EPA. I got a letter off to him with Montana's priorities. I'll be back in D.C. next week meeting with many of these secretaries to make sure Montana's issues are front and center as they come into office and get confirmed by the Senate.
Yeah, and thanks for that. Very much appreciate, those relationships are important, and there's still some leftover work to be done. And I like how you said it, and I've been kind of saying the same thing. It's going to get a little bumpy because when we turn the ship around from the wrong direction, you create some waves. And so I'm just hoping people will recognize and have some grace toward that. I want to finish up here in the final minute or so. I know we've got a break, and then we'll come back. But Medicaid reauthorization. Just you had talked about the work requirements. Maybe have you got any other kind of guardrails that you'd like to see or perhaps discussion as that bill reauthorization goes forward?
Well, we need to make sure that program's there for the people that need it. And people that don't qualify shouldn't be enrolled. This is why, the Biden administration stood in our way for years following the pandemic, saying, the whole Medicaid program was one you could sign up for, but you could never be disenrolled. And we had people that had lost their job, rightfully got benefits, and then got a new job and were making good money, but they were still on the dole. And we cleaned that up. We cut, we made sure that the people that were qualified could get the benefit. And we're going to continue to do that at DPHHS. The bill's been introduced in the legislature. It's going to go through a hearing process. Hopefully, they'll put their fingerprints on it and add some additional accountability to it. The one I'm really hoping stays strong is this work requirement, because I think it's reasonable for able-bodied adults that don't have dependent children at home. They should be looking for work or have work if they want to continue to get these benefits.
You campaigned on getting Montana's economy going again. There was a release recently, I think 42 straight months of record low unemployment, lower than the national average as well. Montana's open for business again, but there's still a lot of work to be done in that regard. We are with Montana's 25th Governor, Greg Gianforte, here this morning. Mike in Billings, stand by. Going to get to your call here in just a little bit. And also, we'll talk more about the Held versus Montana decision, which we had talked a lot about. But there's legislation now that's been brought forth to kind of put those guardrails that's been recommended on it. John Iverson will join us later on in that. And Governor, you know, if they've seen you on Facebook and are following you, I think the biggest smile on your face is when you're out there giving your gun a walk, so to speak. Quite a sportsman. You were named chair of the governor's sportsman group as well. And then you've got the youth hunting program and a contest going on, which is really, really fun. And I want to hear about it.
Well, this youth hunting story contest is something I started when I came into office. This was the third year. And here's why it's important, Tom. If we're going to hold on to our hunting heritage, something we're passionate about here in Montana, we need to encourage the next generation. So what this program is we allow Montana kids age 10 to 17 to go harvest something, which is their right. Then they submit a picture and a little essay on what it was like to hunt with mom or dad or grandpa or whatever. We've had almost 1,000 applicants to this program. There's no cost, and the industry really comes alongside us. And we just had all the winners in the Capitol last week, and it was tough to pick the 10 winners. But boy, we tricked them out with kit. Kennetrek gave them a pair of boots. Rocky Mountain Elk gave them a soft rifle case. J2 Taxidermy gave them a European mount. Stone Glacier gave them all a backpack. They walked out of here ready to go in the field, and we had a wild game feed. I had to empty my own freezer to get all the food on the table, but we had a pheasant casserole. We had pike chowder. We had a smothered moose burrito. We honored these kids, celebrated hunting, and we fed them.
I want to be there. That sounds like a ton of fun. Cody and I are both going, oh, wow. But I can't reverse time. So I'm not a youth anymore.
Come next year.
Okay. Thank you. I will. Tell us a story. Tell us about a couple of those kids who you can see their faces are just lit up when they talk about their hunting experiences.
Well, I had a young man, 10 years old, Hayes from Bozeman. He came with his mom and dad, and his big hunt. This is not about killing a big trophy. This is about an ethical hunt that had some interesting twist to it. Well, Hayes was only 10. He went, practiced shooting trap all summer with his parents, and then he went out and harvested a sharp tail. He showed up at the Capitol. He even brought his bird dog. That was kind of fun. Dog was very well behaved, and we had fun celebrating his hunting success.
And doesn't it take you back? I mean, there's a 10-year-old.
It does.
Yeah.
I had a young man last year. He was from Eastern Montana. I think he was from Colstrip, and he had harvested a whitetail buck, and with a single shot took the thing down. He was an apprentice hunter, 10 years old, and he wasn't even. I mean, he could hardly get up to my belt buckle, this little kid. And I said, how'd you get so good? And with confidence, he turned to me and he said, well, Governor, I shot 400 gophers last summer.
much to the delight of the farmhands, I'm sure. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Doing his job.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for that story. Mike, listening in Billings on KGHL, the Mighty 790. Thanks for hanging on there, Mike. You're on the air with Governor Gianforte.
My question for you, Governor, is highway funding. Now, I know there's a whole lot of convoluted federal hierarchy in this, but what do we need to do to get better roads in Montana? And, you know, I know you gave the Highway Patrol a wage, a raise. What do we need to do to attract people on the lower level, to give them a living wage, to want to be inspired to work for the state? Because I'll be quite frank, our roads around Billings, Bozeman, Livingston, Big Timber are quite atrocious because we have no workforce.
Hmm. Thanks for that, Mike.
Yeah, so it's important. I mean, I think one of the key roles of government is to take care of infrastructure that can't be paid for in any other way, and roads and our highways certainly are in that category. Just put new leadership in place at MDT. I think that's going to help. We need to make the dollars go further. In 2023, we promoted the SAFER Act, which took $100 million of state surplus and put it towards roads and bridges. And we structured it in such a way that we can get up to a 9-to-1 match from the federal government. So that's going to be close to $1 billion going into roads and bridges. We've proposed something similar in this legislative session to make sure the money's there. Now, some of those roads and bridges are maintained by the county. Many of them are maintained by the state. We have an aggressive program. I talked about this during the State of the State to replace 500 state bridges over the next 5 years to upgrade them. And we're going to continue to do that. We did also negotiate a very strong pay increase for state employees. I think it's reasonable. In the last session, because inflation was so high, we bumped their pay 8% over 2 years. This session, we put a plan that will give the lower level employees a higher per hour raise and the remainder an appropriate raise based on slightly less than inflation, but keeping pace. And we've adjusted salaries in other places to make sure we can hire the people we need to get this essential work done.
Thank you for that, Mike. Do you have anything to follow up?
Well, but, you know, like Bozeman, I could go drive a dump truck for $35 an hour. I mean, you know, for like your separate temporary storm temps or even your full-time employees, we need to be able to attain that, irregardless of union wages or whatever, to match the local economy to attain people and retain people, you know. And it's even, I've been told that, you know, the state budget doesn't have an allowance for even full-time temporary storm temps now, you know. So what's going to attract your construction guy to say, you know, heck with unemployment, I'm going to come work here?
Thanks,
well,
Mike.
We've made adjustment where we do have persistent vacancies. We make adjustments in pay to make sure the positions get held. Get hired, and we've done that. We've done that with correctional officers at the prison. We've done it at Warm Springs. We're doing it at MDT. So we're going to make sure we can get the work done. We have my commitment on that.
Thank you, Governor, and thanks, Mike, for that comment, too. I only got like about a minute or so, and I want to pick up the Hell versus Montana decision. The legislature is trying to address that. MEPA is involved, streamlining environmental assessments for fossil fuel activities. If you can do it in a minute, Greg, what are your thoughts on trying to accomplish that?
Well, we need to. I talked about this during the State of the State. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed in this decision from the Supreme Court in Held. They've made a bunch of crazy decisions. In fact, they refused to protect our children. They recently said that parents have no right to even be notified if a minor child goes for surgery, permanent life-altering surgery. So I called out, we need to do judicial reform. I think Montanans should know who they're voting for. So, you know, our Supreme Court's been overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court many times because of their stupid decisions. And we need to elect judges that will stand on the law and not think they're the legislature. And it's time for reform.
Thanks for coming on today. I appreciate that and taking those calls. If people want to know more, go to the governor's website. In fact, January 13th, the entire transcript for that State of the State address, it's all in there as well. Great stuff, Governor. And thank you. And travel well and say hello to Susan for us, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Right now, we're looking at, and this kind of goes down the road too, this Held versus Montana decision. It was a landmark 2023 decision that really placed greenhouse gas emissions on the permit plate of every industry in Montana, in my mind. And that's what people are worried about, you know, this really turning into a backlog of litigation. And there's some that, you know, indicate that that's exactly what they want out of this ruling. There's a bill I had talked about just yesterday and on our legislative report, Senate Bill 221. It's by Wiley Gault, or carried by Wiley Gault, but there's a lot of collaboration in this. He's a senator, GOP senator out of Martinsdale. And they had a hearing on that on Monday. Caught that. A lot of things. The big thing about this bill is that when we had talked over the ensuing months after that decision, and the Supreme Court noted this, there was a need for the legislature to put those guardrails on. And that's one of the things about this decision. I'll introduce John Iverson here to comment on that. That's one of the things about that decision is that, surprisingly, it didn't attempt to legislate those recommendations. And that's what Senate Bill 221 is attempting to do. And there's a lot there to unpack. We'll have a few minutes with John Iverson. He's executive director of the Treasure State Resources Association, is peeled into this one, part of that collaboration process as well. Good morning, John. How are things going for you?
Good morning, Tom. It's cold outside, but it's warm where I'm sitting.
Good.
And you know why it's warm, Tom? Because we have a wonderful energy resources in this state that are keeping our homes and offices warm. And you know, no small part of that is a little town called Colstrip.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And we can't forget that. You know, when we look at our energy transition, there's just more to it than I think what our children's trust, and you can tell us who they are. I know who they are. There's more to it than just what they see about it all. So let's go into this Held versus Montana case as it relates to the work behind Senate Bill 221.
Sure, Tom. If I could start, you know,
yeah.
So a State Resources Association is a broad coalition of mining, agriculture, transportation, energy, timberlands, oil and gas, recreationalists, and organized labor. So we represent the entire cross-section of that economy. We're not just a chamber of commerce of big business, but we represent the workers who benefit from those high-paying jobs also. And so that's what kind of put me front and center as a part of this piece of legislation is my work with Treasure State Resources Association. And really what it came down to is exactly what you said. The court said the legislature needs to create a framework. And so a number of different interested parties got together, and Wiley Gulp had a strong interest in working with those interested parties and started building out this framework of something that would make sense for Montana going forward.
What does make sense? I know that when I watched that hearing testimony, the DEQ had some points that they wanted to bring about in terms of defining the greenhouse gases, in terms of making consistent rulings possible, reasonable scope around what needs to be accessed there. And then there's going to be a DEQ guidance document, all of those things to come out of this. Go into it. I mean, how does get accomplished?
What the, you know, and it's really, you know, it's the Montana Environmental Information Center and other groups like that. They want you to have to evaluate theoretical outputs that may occur halfway across the ocean and bring that back to Montana and blame it on Montana.
Yeah.
When in fact, if that Montana coal never hits the train and it hits the ship and makes it to some other country, there are other coal mines that are happy to fill those coal electrification plants that are halfway around the world. And so it just seems bizarre to us that we would blame that type of carbon output on Montana when, in fact, it's going to occur regardless of what we do in Montana.
Well, and that's one of the things that a lot of experts say the Supreme Court erred in, is that they don't have the authority to make any effectual hearing because of this kind of dynamic. But they're moving forward with it anyway. Talk about then defining greenhouse gases, talking about making consistent policy. What is a reasonable scope around what needs to be accessed?
Well, let's look at our opponents and what they want, Tom. And when you reached out to me, I sent you that demand letter that our children's trust sent to the Department of Environmental Quality. And basically what they say in that demand letter, and also plainly stated in the hearing on the public record, is if this held decision stands and is unaddressed by the legislature, they plan to challenge every greenhouse gas emission permit that's issued. So that's every single thing, you know, except wind, solar, and hydro that's keeping us warm and keeping our lights on right now. And I mean, that just has, it's very unrealistic, the implications that the Montana Environmental Information Center would like to take that held decision to. Something I thought about, just to take it to the most absurd level, because the state issues a permit for you to drive your vehicle. It's your license plate. And there is a cumulative impact of vehicles. And so does the state now have to do you know, some greenhouse gas analysis, not just on your new car that you buy, but every single car on the roadway before they can issue one more license plate. Now, I know that's an absurd distant thing, but if you follow where these groups are going with this decision, they're really heading in that direction where they will be able to just jam up every single thing that people try to do to provide for, you know, the necessities of life. And that's one of the things that's interesting about held where the court erred. They basically elevated the right of a clean and healthful environment above all other rights. You have other rights. You know, you have the right to pursue life's basic necessities. You have the right to possess and protect your property. You know, you have a right to pursue happiness. And what happened in the Held decision is the court said this one right is greater than all other rights. And I think this is what Senator Galt is trying to fix with this bill, bring a balance back to say that, you know, we're going to look at these things, but we have to look at it in a bigger picture. We need affordable power for people to stay warm as well.
You know, I read that from the Montana Constitution, that entire section where we have, and it came from a listener's suggestion as well, to keep that in mind. You know, it comes from a larger section where it's not alone, where it has accompanying all those. And they all say they're equal rights, but I think we can see by this decision and then the one that also came out regarding putting kids' right to privacy above parental right to privacy. So I think the court errs in this regard. Why does a wider road to these court delays mean it's a death march for some of these projects?
Well, it's time value of money, Tom, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And there's the cost of delay, as I'm sure you've reported many times. You know, when we have to buy energy on the spot market and bring it into Montana on perhaps a day like today, it's incredibly expensive. And that goes into the rate base and it costs everyone money. And that impacts real families. And that type of a delay prevents great power resources from coming online and causing us to spend more than we should be spending on our power bills. And that has a negative impact on families.
And unfortunately, I mean, it serves a lot of their purposes, like our Children's Trust. They're just they're a nonprofit public interest law firm, and they're not making money. You can look back at their financial, you know, reports, and they're actually losing money, they say, but it's one of those groups that exists to sue the courts, so to speak. And I don't know that is helping overall when we try to move to a greener transition. Does mm-hmm. What's the recognition of the value of cooperation in all of this?
Well, and exactly, Tom, and just having a reasonable and rational process that people can, that is predictable. You know, these businesses, when they're designing these projects, there's huge capital outlays. And they want to have a reasonable roadmap where they can go to investors or to shareholders and say, hey, we believe, you know, Montana could benefit from this power project. We talked to the PSC. They believe Montana could benefit from this power project. We have this rational process at DEQ in which we can get this permitted, and so we're going to move forward. That's what we need. We don't have that right now because of the Held decision and some of these other court decisions around this clean and healthful environment. And that's the balance I think that my membership and I think a lot of Montanans are seeking.
Landmark decision, the 2023 Held versus Montana case. It did place greenhouse gas emissions, in my mind, on the permit plate of almost every industry in Montana. I think a lot of people are very concerned about how, because there's a lot of loose language in it and it's ill-defined, and there's still disputed facts here despite what some might want to say about it. There's a bill out there that's trying to address that, Senate Bill 221. John Iverson is with us, Executive Director of the Treasure State Resources Association. And trying to understand this from kind of that layman's standpoint, John, I heard one of the industry representatives talk about MEPA, which is what this is addressing, being procedural, not a regulation. And I thought that was an interesting concept because it seems like we think of MEPA as, you know, it makes sure, you know, it that we have to have this or that sort of. But there's a lot of room for, I think, legislative intent here, right?
Well, absolutely, Tom. So the MEPA is this health decision, and Senate Bill 221 is part of a larger package of bills that are coming to address some places, I think, where the courts have wandered off, and the legislature is going to give the courts clear direction. A couple more of those bills are House Bill 270 and House Bill 285.
Okay.
The House Bill 270, MEPA, some people accidentally say this is the Montana Environmental Policy Act, but it's actually the Montana Environmental Procedures Act. Procedure.
Yeah.
And so what MEPA does is it sets the the rules to the road for how a permit must be issued. And what has happened is different environmental groups, Montana Environmental Information Center, most notably, I would say, continues to go to the court, and the court continues, I believe, to misinterpret what MEPA is and what its purpose is. It is not, MEPA is not the standards by which what people have to meet. MEPA is just laying out the process for how it is done. It lays out a roadmap. That's clear for the environmental groups, and it's clear for the energy producers that are trying to bring new energy online. And I just believe, and I think a lot of people believe, the courts have just run too far astray. And so it's the legislature's obligation to give the courts clear direction, and that's our number one goal, is to just make it crystal clear to the courts so that they cannot wander off the rails again.
I appreciate that, because I've noted in some of the opposition, MEAC is going to be one there. They take issue with your very tight language. They want looser language because that allows the courts to interpret and then legislate from the bench. And so I see this is rather tight, so to speak. 270 and 285 in tandem with that is Senate Bill 221. What's going to happen here with these? This package of bills, do you think?
Well, I'll give you one funny little detail. House Bill 270, which is, it's also around MEPA, and it was just simple as could be. It's a clear roadmap, and it has to do with it's kind of built for the lawyers, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the hearing, and all of the environmental groups came and supported it as well. And I thought, oh shoot, have I misread this bill? But actually, what it does is it creates a clear framework and a clear roadmap in an area that they don't dispute needs it. So, interestingly, on that bill, a bill that TISRA worked on, we're on the same side in seeking this clarity as who are usually our adversaries. But then, as we move on to these other bills, who are also doing the same thing, it's the legislature making a clear roadmap on the rules to the road going forward. But of course, then they're vigorously fighting those roadmaps.
Yeah. Out of time for this segment, but that we covered a lot of that, John, and I appreciate that. I'll keep an eye on 270 and 285, and again, 221 as well. It did pass it didn't. I don't think there's been any executive action yet out of committee. Has there?
I haven't checked. Okay. I don't think there has.
Yeah, I don't think there has either, but I'll look into it. John, thanks a lot. I know I always appreciate bumping into you. We chat about a ton of stuff, and all of it matters. So thank you, sir, and have a good session.
Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
TreasureStateResources.org for information. John Iverson, Executive Director there. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.